Let's return to Proverbs chapter number 4 and continue looking at the Proverbs of King Solomon, written, I think, probably somewhere between the 10th and 20th year of his reign, when his eldest son would have been a teenager. And Solomon wants to instill in him the wisdom of God. Now, it's not going to take, spoiler alert, Rehoboam is going to be a bad guy. But the effort is put into it, and some of it has to do with how King David dealt with Solomon when he was a kid. David wanted him to have wisdom, and that comes out in the text here in chapter number 4. And let's go ahead and read. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1. Hear, O sons. He's not just dealing with his singular boy. He's got others in mind. A father's instruction. Be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother. So that'd be David and Bathsheba. After their adultery, after the loss of their first son, the next son that came to them was Solomon. And Nathan is not even in the picture yet. Nathan would be Solomon's younger brother. So it's just him. And he remembers this. This is his earliest memories. Verse 4, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live. So pretty much the same thing that Solomon is now saying to his own sons. Get wisdom. Get insight. Do not forget. Do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her. She will guard you. That gets back to the metaphor, the extended illustration, where God's wisdom, good wisdom, is the young lady that a young man should want to spend the rest of his life with, get married to. Foolishness is the wild woman that you need to stay as far away from as possible. But here, verse 7, he repeats the theme verse, the beginning of wisdom is this. So the beginning of wisdom is what? Fear of the Lord. Respect for he who is. So the beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Whatever you get insight. So make the effort. It's intentional. Prize her highly. She will exalt you. She will honor you. If you embrace her, she will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Talking about the decorations that happen during special festive events. It's going to be like a happy party time if you just get God's wisdom in your life. Verse 10. Hear, my son, and accept my words, that the years of your life may be many. Now that's actually something that was said in connection with the Mosaic Law, is that if you live by these rules, then you will live long in the land. Well, part of the reason you'd live long in the land is because you don't get yourself executed for crimes, or you don't engage in risky behavior that might get you killed by accident or foolishness. So he passes that idea on. You know, listen to this and you'll live longer. Verse 11, I have taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in the paths of uprightness. Very important focus for King Solomon at this time in his life, is that everything should be done according to God's righteousness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered. If you run, you will not stumble. Keep hold of instructions. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. So get yourself engaged to wisdom, God's wisdom. Stay with her. Make her your lifelong partner. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of the evil, which has a little bit of an echo from some psalms that we've already talked about, like Psalm number 1, that how blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. Remember that? So apparently David passed that sort of wisdom on to Solomon. He repeats it to his own kids. Avoid it. Do not go on it, meaning that path that evildoers are on, the superhighway of sinfulness. Don't do it. Turn away from it. Pass on, for they cannot sleep unless they have done wrong. See, they'll lose sleep over the fact they didn't get a chance to take advantage of someone. They are robbed of sleep unless they have made someone stumble. Again, that seems to be their focus in life, is to take advantage of other people. You may remember at the very beginning of the book of Proverbs, Solomon was warning his son not to get involved in gangs that would take advantage of weaker people. Similar wording here. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Very poetic, in a negative sort of way. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. I love that imagery. You know, very often I'm up and about before the sun gets up, and sometimes I'm out on my walk. I've got my little reflective gear on so people can see me. But as I'm walking, it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and I can see better and better and better. And that's what happens when you follow God's wisdom on His path of righteousness. You get better at seeing the path the longer you walk it. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They don't know over what they stumble. Jesus talked about that, is that people who walk in darkness will stumble. But the people who belong to the light, they walk in light. And we need to follow God's light. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart. Remember, the heart is where you make your choices in the thinking process of the Israeli people. So keep them where you make those choices. Keep God's wisdom there. For they are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Now, probably we shouldn't focus on the idea that this is what heals us from our diseases, our illnesses and things. Although, I will emphasize again, people who follow God's wisdom tend to be healthier, partly because they don't engage in over-the-top, excessive, and risky physical behaviors. Verse 23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Where we think, where we make our choices, that pours out into how we live our life. Put away from you crooked speech. Put devious talk far from you. We need to have our yes mean yes, our no mean no. That's a New Testament teaching. When we talk to somebody, they should not wonder whether or not we are being upfront with them. One of the reasons, as a kid, that we used to tell people, do you swear in a Bible? Cross your heart. Hope to die, stick a needle in your eye, things like that. And we, you know, we'd always make sure they weren't crossing their fingers, crossing their toes inside their shoes. Now, you're not counting your shoelaces being crossed, are you? Is because we were living in a culture of not trusting that other person because we'd found out that they weren't trustworthy before. Well, here it is again. God is encouraging through Solomon that we put away that sort of devious speech pattern, the devious sort of talking, and be upfront and honest with people so that they don't have to have us swear on a stack of Bibles and even then wonder whether or not we're going to keep the truth. Verse 25, let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before me, before you. Walking straight is what he's talking about here, not zigzagging back and forth. Ponder the path of your feet, and then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. So we walk the straight and narrow, just like Jesus talks about in the New Testament. Chapter 5. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion. Another idea of making good choices, thinking through stuff. And your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman, a strange woman, drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. So here we're back to the bad lady in this extended illustration. It's a double duty illustration. Solomon is reaching out to his adolescent son and sons who are needing to be warned, don't get involved in illicit relationships with those that are just looking to take advantage of you. Perhaps because you're a prince. They're looking to see what they can get out of you. So there was that issue, the physical side of the story. But I think more importantly, Solomon was focused on the metaphor of foolishness personified. That foolishness, the opposite of God's wisdom, is out there to waylay you. She will tell you what you want to hear. She will spin you. She will do whatever it takes in order to roll you and use you for her own purposes. So, verse 4, that's the warning. In the end, she is as bitter as wormwood. So her words are all honey-filled when she's trying to work you. But eventually, once she's made you as her mark and used you, you find out she is bitter as wormwood. She is as sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. Now, there is a, I think, metaphorical application here of spiritual death, character assassination, that if you let foolishness get a hold of you, she's going to do you harm. But there is a literalness that is a possibility as well. She may, in fact, get you killed and you end up in the place of dead spirits, Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander and she does not know it. So she is not a friend of life. She is a friend of death. And now, O sons, listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. So you may remember at the very beginning in Genesis, Eve said that God told them not to even touch the fruit, let alone eat it. So stay away from it. Don't go near it. And we have, you know, of course, as kids, we were told not to go near certain places or certain people. We as parents did the same thing. So here is Solomon saying, don't go near foolishness. Don't go anywhere near her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. These are all negative outcomes of ruining your reputation, losing your personal property. At the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed. That can be literal as well. If you engage in a lot of illicit sexual behavior, you know, just kind of sow your wild oats and jump from relationship to relationship, you can pick up an awful lot of STDs that way. And some of them will come back and kill you eventually. And it'll be painful in the process. And Solomon is trying to help his sons avoid both the physical dangers as well as the eternal spiritual dangers of getting involved in unwise situations. And then you're going to end up saying, how I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. I didn't listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. So eventually, you know, you regret it. I mean, here I am, I'm 65, and I still think from time to time, man, I wished I had paid better attention in that class. Wow, I wished I'd taken that particular class instead of avoiding it. Well, the same thing applies to matters of God's wisdom. Some people eventually, many years, many decades down the line, regret that they didn't follow through with what their godly parents and grandparents and their preachers and their Sunday school teachers were trying to teach them from God's word. Because, as it goes on to say, verse 14, I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. I am in a mess. Then he says this, and remember, he has been mixing foolishness as the personification of a woman that can't be trusted, a wild woman. But he's been mixing that with the idea of don't get yourself mixed up with the wild women literally. You find yourself a good Jewish girl who loves God and doesn't sleep around, and you fall in love with her and make a lifelong commitment to her. So he's kind of trying to do double duty with the book of Proverbs here. Well, now he, I think, jumps onto that physical side, the literal physical side of finding the right woman to spend the rest of your life with and doing that. Now, if you haven't figured it out, and I haven't repeated this much lately, when we're going through many of these stories of the Old Testament, there is a lot of PG-13 material. And I hope you've been paying attention along the way without me having to tell you, hey, maybe you should get your younger kids involved somewhere else instead of listening to this episode. Well, I'm going to say that right now. Maybe you should get some of your younger kids that might be around involved elsewhere. Because this is more PG-13 stuff. Okay? So he says to his adolescent boy or boys, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. This is a reference to keep your sexual relationships with your wife and only with your wife. Should your springs be scattered abroad, springs of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. That's how we know that that's what he's talking about, is you find the good young lady, you get yourself engaged to her, you get married to her, and then you love her and be committed to her for the rest of your lives. Verse 19, a little bit of poetry here that shows up in other wisdom literature celebrating marriage. Rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. One of the problems that rose up in church history is that there were some groups that got this idea that sexuality was only for the reproduction of the human race, and it was not intended to be for pleasure only. Well, that's just nonsense. Let's just be honest about it. That is not what Scripture teaches and upholds. This is one of those passages. God gave sexuality before sin came into the world as a gift to married couples, and it was to be pleasurable. And so that is exactly how he describes it here to his adolescent son, that, you know, when you do get married, enjoy it, enjoy your wife, enjoy the relationship, and only with her, no one else. Verse 20, why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman, a strange woman, an illicit woman, and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? So why should you get involved in a relationship with somebody else? You stay with the woman you're committed to. For a man's ways are before the eyes of he who is, and he ponders all his paths. So God is watching. It doesn't matter if you go off to, you know, a motel a couple of towns over. God knows. And even though they try to promote this idea of whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, God knows. We need to be committed to the wives and the husbands of our youth and enjoy that relationship and never even consider the possibility of spreading around into other relationships. And God is watching, and so we should be aware of that. Verse 22, the iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. So God watches while some people give in to temptation and get themselves spiritually and sometimes physically dead. And that is not a good situation, and Solomon doesn't want that for his boys. Chapter 6. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you're snared in the words of your mouth, caught up in the words of your mouth. Now, let's explain what he's talking about here. He's talking about at some future date, if you're goofy enough to co-sign on a loan, because that's what this is about. I know some of you have co-signed on loans with close personal friends and for your kids or your grandkids. I'm telling you, the Bible advises against it in all cases. If they can't afford it, don't help them get into a situation where they can't afford it by co-signing. It's not appropriate choice. And so you see it in passages like, I was trying to think, one of them from the No, most of the ones I'm looking here are from Job, but there are places in the Mosaic Law that warn you against basically becoming a pledge for somebody else's debt. So he just is repeating what's already in the law. He says, if you went ahead and did it anyway, then verse 3, do this, my son, and save yourself, for you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Basically, go talk to the person that holds the debt and get that worked out. You don't want to be or remain a cosigner on a loan. You want to help those people, give them a gift, but don't cosign. And there will be practical comments like that repeatedly through the book of Proverbs. This next part reaches out to an issue that is not exclusively part of an adolescent world, but it definitely happens there, and that is laziness. Now, I remember being an adolescent and being kind of lazy on things, and my parents motivating me, putting a little dynamite under me to make me do what I needed to do. In this case, Solomon uses the ant as an example of hard work needing to be done. And it always makes me think about the ant and the grasshopper story when we come to this passage. Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways, and be wise. Without any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. And since we're out of time, we'll mark our place there and get right back to the word next time we have chance.